Good morning, everyone. The reading this morning is from the Old Testament, Exodus 16, 2-15. The reading comes from the book of Exodus, which records the journey of the Israelites from Egypt on their way to the Promised Land. As you can imagine, the Hebrew people became hungry, tired, and disheartened. The reading begins. The whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread, for you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Then the Lord said to Moses, "I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you, and each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day. In that way I will test them, whether they will follow my instruction or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather on other days." So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, "In the evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaining against the Lord. For what are we that you complain against us?" And Moses said, "When the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and your fill of bread in the morning, because the Lord has heard the complaining, your complaining is not against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the Israelites, 'Draw near to the Lord, for he has heard your complaining.'" And as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the Israelites, they looked towards the wilderness. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, "I have heard the complaining of the Israelites. Say to them, 'At twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall have your fill of bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God.' In the evening, quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a fine, flaky substance, as fine as frost on the ground. When the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, 'What is it?' For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, 'It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat.'" Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
I'd like to start off with something that's going to require some congregational participation, so join along with me. I know you can do this. "I saw her today at the reception, a glass of wine in her hand. I knew she would make her connection. At her feet was a footloose man. No, you can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try, sometimes you just might find you get what you need." I knew we could do that. 1969, the Rolling Stones released that song. And it was a social commentary on the decade of the 60s. It spoke to the themes of love, of politics. It begins each verse with that initial sense of optimism. And then there's kind of like an increasing, growing bit of disillusionment, and then kind of a resigned pragmatism that ends each verse. You'll get what you need. But as you kind of remind yourself of this song, or as we remind ourselves of this story of our faith in Exodus, do we really believe it? Do we really believe that we will get what we need? Do we really believe that we have enough? Do we live in a place where the cup is, as they say, half full or a little bit more half empty? Do we believe that God provides enough, and that we believe that God's enough is enough? Well, if we don't believe that, I think this morning we find ourselves in good company. Because frankly, the Israelites did not believe that God would provide enough for them. Now, if we track back in the story a little bit, it's always helpful to do that as we unpack a passage. So we track back a little bit, the Hebrew people have been slaves in Egypt for centuries. Depending on which scholar you read, it's somewhere between 200 and 400 years they have been Egyptian slaves. Imagine, people have died as slaves. They have been born into slavery. They have married. The generations have been born and continued. Slavery was their way of life for as long as they could possibly remember. And while they had food, and they had somewhat of an existence, their life was a time of abuse and oppression, and they yearned, they hoped, they dreamed for the land of promise, the land of milk and honey. Things change right here and now. A few chapters earlier, things change. They escape. A few chapters earlier, the miracles start to happen. The plagues come upon Egypt. The Passover miracle happens. The Red Sea is parted, and Moses leads the Israelites on to the promised land. The first place they arrive just before this passage is Elim. It's an oasis in the wilderness. It is a place where there is streams of water, palm trees, food. Things are pretty good, pretty hopeful. 45 days have transpired since their exodus. And in the 16th chapter, as we begin in verse 2, things take a big turn. They leave Elim, they leave the oasis, and they move on towards what the passage describes as being the wilderness of sin. As they move on, as we kind of played with here, they find themselves without food. In the next chapter, they're going to find themselves without water. And throughout, they're starting to wonder, they're starting to really wonder spiritually, are they also without God? And they start to complain. They complain to Moses and Aaron. They say, if only we had died by the hand of the Lord back in Egypt, where we ate at the flesh pots. We ate our fill of bread, we were filled, but you took us out into the wilderness to starve us and kill us. They complained over and over. Did you actually see how many times they complain in this passage? It's so human nature, isn't it? 6 different times in that passage. Well, if Israel didn't really trust that God would provide, and if that was still alive in the 60s through that song, and if we, kind of in the honesty of ourselves and maybe in the honesty of our community as we explore this in faith, we're not always sure that God will provide too. Perhaps the wisdom of this passage that is 3,500 years old would continue to speak truth and hope for us today. There's a few things that I think it really lifts up for me. One is that I think this passage, the hope that I see is that God is found in the ordinary stuff of life. I think so often in our lives, we look for God in the extraordinary places. I mean, why don't we? We live in BC, the most beautiful part of the world. We see the mountains and the oceans. How could we not look for God in the extraordinary moments? The Israelites, they had the extraordinary moments. They had the miracles God provided, the Passover miracle, the plague, I mean, all the different things, the Red Sea. But I think this passage is kind of grounding us here and now and around us and saying, God is here now in the ordinary things of life. The miracles that God provides are both normal, natural events for the Sinai Peninsula. The quail, the birds, the meat they ate at twilight, the manna, the bread from heaven. They're both kind of naturally occurring events. Let me explain a little bit. It's interesting. The manna is formed, and this is a bit gross, it's like a bug slime that occurs throughout the evening. Plant lice crawl across a tamarisk leaf, and they puncture the leaf and excrete kind of a slime, and throughout the evening that slime congeals and forms a flaky yellow-white frost. It congeals into almost like a kernel, and in the morning people can gather it, grind it up into like a flour, and make bread. And if you were to go on a trip to the Holy Land and go into Israel and Egypt and all those special places, people continue to want to eat manna. The quails are also kind of an interesting story. Quails are migratory birds. It's said that they are migrating from Africa, all the way from Africa. Some of them are blown in from the Mediterranean. Either way, these poor little guys are exhausted. And when they reach the Sinai Peninsula, you can almost catch them by hand because they're so tired. Now, let me ask you a question. If these are naturally occurring events, does it make it any less a miracle of God's provision when we look at them that way? These are the ways that they found God providing for them in their time of need, and they looked around in the ordinary events of life, and they saw manna, and they saw quails, and they got what they needed. I'm not saying we don't need to look for God in the extraordinary moments of life, birth of a child, hiking a mountain, I mean, all the extraordinary things that we get to take part in. I'm saying that we also, in our faith, need to be aware that God is around us, the heartbeats, in our day-to-day living. Where does God provide for you in the ordinary? Where is God for you in the ordinary events of life? I sometimes think children can be wonderful guides for us in these kind of quests, because a childlike perspective can really enhance the adult perspective that's so often focused on the quote-unquote important stuff in life. A childlike perspective can help us sometimes realize that God is there. I think that's why Jesus, kind of that passage in Mark where Jesus welcomes the children on his knee even after the disciples sternly ordered him not to, and he still did it. A childlike perspective is key. It's sort of something where a child reminds us as we're walking along that God is there in the delicacy of a flower. A child reminds us as we're walking along that God is there in the intricacy of an anthill. A childlike view reminds us as we're walking along that God is there in a blackberry bush overflowing with fruit. Little miracles around us. Where does God provide for you in the ordinary stuff of life? Well, this week we had an interesting phone call. Lady, a senior lady, she doesn't drive, and she said, I have some donations for the church. I really like what you do in the community. Some donations for the food pantry, for people that drop in need of food, and for the thrift shop. So she didn't drive, so Addie and I just drove a few blocks and picked up her items, and she was so excited to be part of what Northwood does. Where does God provide for you in the ordinary? Just last month, I was so excited to hear the story of Surrey having their first annual Pride Parade. Very first annual Pride Parade for this city, 26th of June. A peaceful gathering where this city supported, celebrated the LGBTQ community in peace and harmony. Where does God provide for you in the ordinary? Just earlier this week, I received a phone call from the Surrey Interfaith Network. Just wanted to share what they're up to for the fall and the winter, and hoping that Northwood will continue to be a partner involved in that work of interfaith understanding and cooperation and support. Where does God provide for you the ordinary stuff of life? Well, so far, I've just lifted up a few examples, and they've all been kind of happy instances in life. A lovely senior donating out of her abundance. A peaceful parade for the LGBTQ community, interfaith harmony, and peace. But I would suggest also, and even more so, that God provides and God shows up in the difficult, challenging, painful parts of life. That even more so, God is there when we really desperately need God. You know, when I was in the 90s, I was in theology school. I was so excited to practice ministry. And you know what I was excited about? This is so naive looking back. I was so excited to do kind of some of the joy-filled ceremonies, like a wedding, for example. Like, how much fun is that going to be? But what I found, and they're still fun, and God is still there. But what I found is that God is so present and so alive and so much providing in those difficult times in life. I found that God is there and providing at a deathbed, providing comfort. I found that God is there and providing when we gather for a funeral, offering healing. I found that God is there, alive and providing at a rainy graveside, raining down healing and hope. Do you find yourself in a place of pain and difficulty and challenge these days? Part of the message in this story is that God will provide for you in those difficult times. I've only been here a couple weeks at Northwood now, but I've heard lots of stories and lots of deep concerns and uncertainties that you have in your hearts about your church. People are worried. Worried about the roof. Worried about the building. Worried about downsizing staffing. They're worried about finding the right minister who will continue on the great work that will continue from others. Worried. But if we listen to this passage, if we truly embody it in our faith, we know that God will provide. It's interesting, the manna, when we do a Hebrew translation, the manna that they provided, the bread from heaven that they received, it's an interesting translation. It doesn't mean bread, right? Manna, if you translate it into English, is, what is this? It's kind of like they look for this and they say, well, what the heck is this stuff? They wanted bread. They wanted food. They thought they knew what they wanted, but this is what they get. But they found it was enough. God's enough was enough. I think that's the deepest message of this passage. Is that in our yearnings and in our longings, in our times of joy, in our times of uncertainty, God will provide enough. And that enough will be enough. I want to just conclude with a poem. It's entitled, I Wish You Enough. I wish you enough, sun, to keep your attitude bright. I wish you enough rain to appreciate the sun more. I wish you enough happiness to keep your spirit alive. I wish you enough pain so that the smallest joys in life appear much bigger. I wish you enough gain to satisfy your wanting. I wish you enough loss to appreciate all that you possess. I wish you enough hellos to get you through the final goodbye. Enough is enough. Thanks be to God. Amen.